CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Now back to Fire It Up with CJ. Be a force for good. And fire it up with CJ. Log on, fireitupwithcj.com. And call CJ now.
248-545-7685.
Leave. On CBS Radio's The Sky. The Sky.
Welcome back to New Sky Radio's Fired Up with CJ. Our guest today is CNN columnist and teen expert Vanessa Van Petten. I'm Cassandra from CBS Sky Radio, and I want to welcome back CJ and Vanessa.
Hey, thank you. Hey, guys. So we are talking about something I'm sure all parents are really curious about. How do you know if your child is lying to you? And so we're going to be talking to Vanessa Van Petten to help us gauge a sense of how we know. Like how we'll know when that is happening. And one of the things that Vanessa writes in her book, Do I Get My Allowance Before or After I'm Grounded, she has an interesting passage that I thought I'd share. She said, arguing is a way your child works out difficulties, work through their disagreements, and they're telling you the truth. That's basically what is happening, is that lying is simply a way to avoid an argument and pretend to give in to your parents' demands. And it goes on further saying that when parents will not compromise or listen, then teens figure out how to get around their parents through lying and risky behaviors. I never thought of lying that way, Vanessa. I thought it was interesting.
There was a really interesting study that looked at the amount of lying in different households, and they tried to find what was it? What was the correlation between more or less lying in a certain household? And they found that in households where there was more arguments, there was less lies.
Mm-hmm.
And when they dug deeper into it, and I talked to a lot of teenagers about this study because I thought it was really crucial. It was something that we hadn't thought about before, mm-hmm. was that when parents think of arguments, it makes them stressed. They think about, like, going mm-hmm. to the dentist, right?
Mm-hmm. Like, yes, exactly.
Case. When teens think about arguing, they think of it as playing a ball game or, winning a hand of cards. For them, it's,
oh my
it's
gosh.
A way of negotiating, it's a way of learning about the other person. It's a way to get to truth. And mm-hmm. unfortunately, in houses where there isn't an open dialogue, and by the way, when I say arguing, I don't mean abusive arguing. I don't mean, screaming at each other. I don't mean cursing. I don't mean being mean. I mean heated discussion, right? Mm-hmm. There's a difference between healthy arguing and abusive arguing. And I'm talking mm-hmm. about the healthy arguing, the honest, respectful, heated discussion.
Right.
And first of all, it's really important to actually teach our kids how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
We don't actually think about that. But when they get into relationships, you want them to be able to have a disagreement and work it out in a respectful way.
Mm-hmm.
So A, you're teaching them that. And then B, it's giving them a place to voice what they're thinking and to get to truth.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, arguing for teenagers can be a sign of respect because a parent is basically saying, I'm willing to talk to you like an adult. I'm willing to hear your opinion. I might not agree with it, and we might have to agree or disagree because I'm the parent, but at least I'm willing to hear you out, and
mm-hmm.
I want to hear all aspects of the story.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge way to build respect and to get to know your teenager, and it definitely avoids lies. But the manipulation,
right.
the going behind their back, there's a lot less of that when you're willing to have a healthy argument.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, I just had something like that. My son, he listened to me. I was like, I'm not even going to go and repeat what I've said 1,000 times because you know what I care about. And he's like, yes. And I said, so the question is, because it's like, why?
Yeah.
As parents,
yeah.
we kind of want to repeat the same line that we go through, which I think for children must be total, utter torture. Like, you know how I want you to not play video games. I'm like, I'm not going to go there because you know what I'm going to say. But the question
yeah.
is what am I supposed to do? I see you doing this and, I'm worried about your brain development because you love playing Halo. And he listened respectfully. And at the end, he's like, Mom, I just need downtime. And I was like, okay. It's just like this one killer line. He's like, I just need downtime. And
right,
it's a way for me to get downtime.
And that interaction, him first, in a non-yelling, in a non-sort of door-slamming way, saying, you know what bothers me. You know I don't like this. I want to give your brain a break. And him being able to say to you, I need downtime, he's more likely next time when he wants to play a game, instead of sneaking it after bedtime hours or going over to a friend's house or, you know, secretly plugging it in while you're downstairs, he's more likely to say to you, Mom, please, I just need that downtime I told you about.
Yeah.
So it's a much better way to have a relationship. And as they get older and older, and eventually when they're out of the house and have a, you know, a spouse and family, hopefully themselves, you want to be able to have that relationship where you can say to them, hey, you know, I'd love you to bring the grandkids over. And instead of them speaking behind your back, you know that they can have an honest, open conversation with you.
Right. I'm tired. I've worked all week. I really just need a break
right.
to hang out with our family or whatever it is.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So telltale tales. I can't even say it. How can you tell when they're lying?
So lying is a human lie detection is a relatively new branch of fraud detection. And it is very, very complex, but I will try to distill it for you into a couple of key nuggets for things to watch out for. First of all, you should know that women are better than men at detecting lies. So if any moms are listening, you already have a leg up. Intuitively, moms tend to have a better idea of when their children are lying, so that's good. Mm-hmm. The basic tenet is to see when nonverbal messages are mismatching verbal messages. So, for example, there are 7 universal facial expressions. We talked about fear earlier, that when you see the whites of someone's eyes above their pupils and they lift their eyelids, you know that they're afraid of something. So the ultimate sign of lying is when someone shows you that face but says they're fine. Or, for example, they say, I'm so happy for you. A lot of women, we hear our friends say, oh, yeah, I'm so happy for you. But they don't look happy, right? The best tenet, and again, this comes back to paying attention and having face-to-face conversations with your kids as much as possible, not side-by-side, not across the dinner table, not through text. It's surprising how many conversations are now happening over text, actually, between parents and kids, especially heated discussions. Things like, Mom, can I go out with Susie this weekend? Well, where are you going? We're going to the movies, you know, that kind of back and forth, which definitely from a logistics perspective is great. But you want to be able to look them in the face and say, oh, you're going to the movies. Which movie? And you want to make sure that their face is telling the truth. They're showing no weird tics. They're not showing fear. A lot of times when kids are making up a story, like they're saying, oh, yeah, I'm going to go to the movie, but really they're planning on going to a party. They show fear because they're afraid of being caught. You cannot do that over text message.
Right.
So the more face-to-face you can do to look for hidden or latent fear and then mismatching verbal and nonverbal, that's the most basic. I mean, it's much more complicated than that, but that in itself will help a lot.
Yeah, no, I'm a life coach, and so I work with clients, and they'll say, no, I'm really happy about this job. I'm like, really? Because everything about the way you said it, how you're saying it, your face, everything is pointing that you really aren't happy at that job. So, and I guess it's a form of lying. Like, they're not lying, but it's a form of lying to themselves in this particular case, I think. It's interesting.
With teens, they're less about lying to themselves. They're more about lying about what they can and can't do. So it's easier to
get it. Exactly. All right. So there are a couple other things that you talk about in your book that I love. So you have, they're telling a sequence of events. You have them repeat the sequence backwards.
So these are actually what a lot of interrogators use. Not that we're funny interrogating kids, but these are for those unique, and hopefully you never have these situations. But if you get into a situation with your teenager where their safety is involved or the school's involved, or you really just need to get to the truth, whatever it is, the truth is more important than blame or punishment or anything. These can be used to get to whatever the truth is. So a lot of the times I've noticed that those kind of situations are like what happened at the party, if it's cyberbullying, who texted who, when did this start. They're kind of events that happen, sequences of events. Mm-hmm. So typically liars will formulate the story in their head from the beginning to the end, the fake story. The real story is different. Mm-hmm. So they practice it in their head beforehand from the beginning to the end, and they rehearse it for you. So if you're suspecting that there might be something off, a little fishy, maybe a lie, you can actually ask them to tell the story again, but starting from a different place in the story. Or, okay, so tell it to me the other way. So before you got to the party, what did you do? If a truth teller can no problem tell you that, because they actually did it. It's easy for them. They can start anywhere in the story, and they can tell it backwards.
Right.
A liar has a very, very difficult time doing that because they didn't rehearse it that way. So you either will see that they'll slow down or avoid doing it. They'll try to get you off topic, or right. they miss it. They miss the timeline. The story changes. So that's something you can try. Another thing that liars do a lot is to buy for time as they repeat your question, mm-hmm. or they ask, they respond with a generalization. So for example, do you smoke pot? Very direct question. Yeah. They would say, why are you asking if I smoke pot? Or do I smoke pot? They repeat the question. Or I don't think pot is good for you, which is a generalization. It's not an answer.
So statistically
speaking, liars do that the most. And we even do this from a subconscious place because we're doing everything we possibly can to avoid actually having to outright lie.
Right. I love it. All right. So we have Vanessa Van Patten, and she's sharing some of the things that she has in her book, Do I Get My Allowance Before or After I'm Grounded? So we shared some tips about lying. Next, we're going to get back and talk about how to have a productive but challenging conversation with your teen. We'll be right back.